Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I am the managing editor of Reader Views in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Our show is recorded live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's June 7th, 2007, and welcome to episode number 28 in our series. Tonight's topic is Successful Ghostwriting, Co-authoring, and Collaboration, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Amy Hendrickson of www.museinc.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. A couple of cool announcements this week. First, we are happy to say that the book that you listeners wrote called The Story That Must Be Told, True Tales of Transformation, has begun shipping as of today. It's a collection of 20 amazing stories of love, courage, perseverance, and forgiveness, and it makes the perfect gift, now available at lovinghealingpress.com. We're also proud to announce this week the availability of our podcast on Apple's iTunes system. You can find us under Podcasts in iTunes by searching on Authors Access. Even if you don't own the ubiquitous iPod, there are many advantages to using the free iTunes software on your PC. After you subscribe to Authors Access Podcasts, it will automatically download each new episode to your computer as soon as it's posted on the Internet. If you do own a portable MP3 player, iPod or otherwise, it will then be sent to your iPod at the next available opportunity, allowing you to learn more about writing, publishing, marketing on your daily commute, on the exercise treadmill, or even while mowing your lawn. Now tonight we're on the line with award-winning screenwriter and best-selling co-author Amy Hendrickson. She's the founder of Muse, Inc., inspiring writers and helping them put their vision into words. Hendrickson is ghostwritten on projects about photography, architecture, business process, home improvement, local history, food, nutrition, and horsemanship. In fact, she has worked with and written for some of the world's leading horsemen. She co-authored Clinton Anderson's Down Under Horsemanship, now an international success, and two of her books routinely rank in Amazon.com's top five best-selling books in the horse book category. Her next book, The Rider's Pain-Free Back, a book on back health, co-written with neurosurgeon Dr. James Worson, will be released from Trafalgar Square Books this coming July. Her published and produced credits include advertising copy for companies like Whirlpool, Hayworth, and Miles Labs, video voiceover, video text, promotional scripts, feature articles, songs, publications, and much more. Again, you can find out more about her personal projects at www.amyhendrickson.com. And now we're going to go to this week's special guest, Amy Hendrickson. Good evening to you, Amy.
Well, good evening, Victor and Irene.
Hi. Wow, as I'm listening to your introduction, you've been places. You've done a lot of things. And we're really grateful to have you on this show. Gosh, I just hope we have enough time to ask you everything we want to. So let's get right into it. And your topic today is successful ghostwriting, co-authoring, and collaboration. Okay, so what's the difference between ghostwriting, co-authoring, and collaborating?
Everything that a writer does that the writer does not get to take sole credit for often falls under the umbrella of ghostwriting. But to me, there are three specific niches or levels. The first is ghosting, and that's where the writer does all the work, and the writer gets paid, and the writer gets no credit. The next, then, is co-authoring. If I'm a co-author, the writer does all the work, the writer gets paid. The writer may even share royalties in the project and then also gets shared credit, usually with the expert's name first and then a with or an as told to and then the actual writer's name afterwards. That's co-authoring. And then collaborating is where the writer is part of a team. It's a true joint effort between two or more creatives. So all the names that are involved in the collaboration are separated by the word and. So it's, you know, so-and-so writer one and so-and-so writer two. The writer has a say in the final content. The writer gets a chance to hold part of the copyright, perhaps, and also gets to share in the royalties. So there are three different levels, to my mind, whenever we talk about writing, allowing somebody else to have the use of my words or the writer's words. So anyway, those are the distinctions. But essentially, they can all be lumped under the umbrella of ghosting.
Yes, I can see that, but I can also see the difference, and there's a great difference. So let's just go into one at a time and start off with ghostwriting. And
okay.
Just give us maybe a little bit more insight on what you as a ghostwriter would do for me as an inspiring author.
Okay. Generally, whenever I talk about ghostwriting or any sort of thing where there's more than one person involved as the creative force behind a project, it helps to break it down into naming who's involved in the project. And for me, there is the writer, because there are several experts. Whenever they bring a ghostwriter or a collaborator or a co-author in, they bring that person in as an expert, as a writing expert. But then the writer is also working with another expert, and just for ease, I call that the field expert. He or she is an expert in his or her field. So, for instance, let's say that you are an expert in your field, whatever that might be, and it could be something, you know, as easy as birdhouse building, you know, or lawn mowing. It could be anything. The last book project I did, for instance, the expert was a neurosurgeon. So he's perfectly capable of writing a book, but he had never written one before. So he's the field expert. If I'm going to help him write his book, it is imperative that the entire book must sound like him, must be his content, or content that he at the very least has approved, if not come up with on his own. And so if a writer comes in to work on a ghosting project, the writer works very closely with the field expert to make sure that all of the content that results then sounds like the expert, reads like the expert, and really is a product of the expert's knowledge. The writer is just the funnel, the way to get the words onto the page and bring them to a larger reading public.
So how much knowledge does the ghostwriter have to have about the topic?
if you're asking, am I a neurosurgeon? No, I am not. And you absolutely do not want me operating on your back, I can tell you. it's interesting. In some ways, the more you know about a topic, the better. For many of the experts that I work with are experts in some form or another in the horse world, and I am conversant with the world of horses I grew up riding and showing, and so I have more than just a passing acquaintance, you know, with equestrians and with that whole genre, that whole, you know, world. On the other hand, sometimes if the writer knows too much, that can actually be something that you must consciously put aside, because as a writer, I don't want to bring my information necessarily and make it sound like it's somebody else's words. I don't want to put words in somebody else's mouth. And so if I know something about the topic, once the project gets to a point where it's ready for a major edit, for example, that's when I can bring to bear my own understanding of the situation and say, well, have we thought about this, or let's take this into consideration. What do you think? And I feel very comfortable making suggestions if it's something I truly know something about or if it's something I've researched. On the other hand, I worked on a book last year where I edited and ghost wrote, essentially, a book on photography. Again, something about which I know very little, until I wrote the book. And as I got into it and as I started picking apart what the expert had to say and putting it together, I learned much, much more. And sometimes, in my experience, it's good to go into a project where you're actually, as the writer, I'm approaching the project much as a reader would. And so if I really know nothing or very little about it, and if I would make an ideal reader of the book because I would pick up that book and try to learn about it, that actually helps me, because then I do know the right questions to ask the expert, and I know the questions then that need to be answered in the book. Does that make sense?
Of course it does. So what you're talking about is, okay, you talked about horses photography, talking to about a field expert in these particular areas. What about ghosting, let's say, a memoir or a biography?
Mm-hmm. If the project is a memoir, again, then the expert, again, is the person who has experienced that life or experienced the events. And, again, then it helps clearly, if I'm writing somebody's memoir, or if I'm helping somebody put together their life story, I have not lived that person's life. But one of the jobs of a good ghost, I think, one of the jobs of any writer who is helping to tell somebody else's story is making sure that all of the questions that the reader might have get answered at some point in the text. And so it's my job then, I see it as the writer, to work with you who have lived the life and who have lived the story and to help you find a framework to frame the story, to help you find the themes within the story, to help guide you on a roadmap and to help say, okay, this is where we're going to start, where would you like to end, help lead you through the end, and then help you, sometimes, especially with a biography or a memoir, the person who has lived it and experienced it is often too close to the events to really be able to take an objective look at them. And so it's the writer's job to help weed through all of them and try to find the ones that are most important. But on the other hand, it still comes down to the expert, the person who lived that life. It's still their story, and what they ultimately say goes. The writer can provide guidance, but it really is up to the expert to decide, truly have final say in what is included and what is not.
It almost seems more difficult to ghost a memoir or a biography than it would, let's say, a book on horses, because it just, you know, you're really having to get into the person's life and obviously get to really know them and their life to be able to write it in their voice, because basically what you're doing is writing their voice, are you not?
Absolutely, but I would argue that it doesn't matter whether it's a memoir, whether it is a nonfiction project, or even whether it's a work of fiction that has been written by and has been established by an established author, and then the ghostwriter comes in and perhaps continues a series. If you are an expert in a field, you already have a following, probably. Especially if a publisher is willing to publish your book, you probably already have a platform and people already know you. Some of the experts that I've worked for, they have television shows. People know what they sound like. And so whether it is a nonfiction book like a how-to, whether it's a memoir or something like that, yes, part of the writer's job is to absolutely get the expert's voice across. Mm-hmm. And so a little hint, wasn't going to talk about it, but the easiest way to do that that I have found, okay, is do not allow the expert to write anything down at all. Do not. The reason they need a ghostwriter is because one way or another they look at the printed page and somehow they seize up. Either they write way too much or they don't know where to start, but regardless, if they're not accustomed to writing, whatever they put on the printed page ends up looking like they're trying to write something, and it doesn't sound like them. It sounds like composition speak. And so the easiest way that I have found, and it makes the book writing just a painless process, is I write out a list of questions on a series of topics that the book is going to cover. And the very first thing that the expert and I do before we work on a project is we, often with the publisher, gets involved at this stage, we come up with a very tightly framed focus for the book, and then I come up with a suggested table of contents, and then I go in and I make an expanded table of contents. And so for every topic or subtopic in the table of contents, I go and I write in every single minute little thing that I think should be covered in that. And I have the expert look at it and say, yes, that makes sense. No, we don't need to include that. And we agree on an expanded table of contents. Then the easy thing to do is you just go through as the writer. You come up with a whole series of questions on each subtopic that you feel need to be answered, and you ask the expert to simply dictate the answers, just talk to you. Either get them on the phone and record it, or have them get a little, miniature cassette or an MP3 or something and just dictate it. And then you truly have their voice. And that's the easiest way I've found to learn how they compose sentences, what their speech mannerisms are, what sorts of words they use, how long the words are, how short the words are, any sort of idiosyncratic sentence structure, that sort of thing. It's very easy then.
Wow, there's a lot to it. And so we're talking about nonfiction, What about fiction? What if I want to hire you to write a mystery under my name? I'm not really an expert mm-hmm. in mysteries, but I've read a few books, and I've watched a few movies, but I want you to write me a book.
Well, if you are not an established mystery author, then I'm home free, because I can just write my mystery and slap your name on it. That's fine.
Because, and you will do that for me.
Sure, I'll do that. But no, if you are an established, let's say that you are an established author, and everybody listening is aware of, there are many authors out there who are well established and they have a following, and if you start looking at them, they have a new book that comes out, and the big author's name is in big giant words across the top, so that sells the book. And then the ghostwriter, collaborator, co-author's name is in teeny little letters somewhere on the front cover. So that is more, I think, what you're talking about, because, like, let's say if I'm going to write, for anybody who's established, I don't want to start naming names, but for anybody who has an established series, it's very important, A, that as the writer, I can prove to the publisher that I can write in that person's voice. So, you know, if you have an established voice, if you have an established sort of series, I must be very familiar with it, and then I must be able to write in that voice, and usually a chapter or two should prove that I can do it. Then it all depends if I'm writing a mystery for you, Irene.
Okay. I'm listening.
because your multi-millions of readers are clamoring for more and you simply don't have the time, then what I need to do, I would prefer to work with you, make sure that you approve the story, you know, and make sure that it sounds like you and that it has your stamp on it, essentially. Frankly, I haven't done a lot of ghostwriting per se in the fiction world, except, but I have done I've done quite a bit of collaborating on screenplays, and so that's where my experience with fiction comes in.
Okay, but you know, I want to have millions of people following me,
Well, of course you do.
But I would like you to write me a mystery so I can get mm-hmm. my name known. Is this something that a ghostwriter can actually do?
It probably is, but it's not something that I would do. Because it sounds to me, and here's why, and it's really not something that I would actually advise too many ghostwriters to do. Here's why. Ghostwriting, we can get into this perhaps a little bit later, but I feel before getting into any sort of project where somebody else's name goes before your own, which means to the vast majority of your readers, somebody else is going to take the credit for your work. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that if you go in with your eyes open. But if you are not well established in the mystery field, let's say this is for me personally, or if I were advising somebody who was thinking of ghostwriting for you, if you didn't already have a huge following, if you didn't necessarily have a big publisher that I was dying to get my foot in the door with, there would be many. Permutations and many questions that would need to be answered before I would write a complete work of fiction for somebody else to put their name on. There are ways that I would do it, and there are ways that perhaps would be good for a ghostwriter to do so, especially if the ghostwriter wanted desperately to work with the established author in some way, or if, like I said, if the ghostwriter wanted to develop a working relationship with the publisher who was going to publish that book. But for the most part, you're going to be doing an awful lot of work, pulling out an awful lot of hair and turning gray over a project that's ultimately not yours. And so you really need to go into that with your eyes open.
Well, that certainly makes sense, and I guess I just got a big rejection.
We can talk later.
Okay.
Actually, though, here's another thing, too. If you're truly interested in hiring somebody to write a book for you, you kind of have to ask yourself why. Why would you do that? Why not write the book yourself? Usually whenever a person needs a ghostwriter, it's generally because they're either A, way too busy within their field. So the neurosurgeon didn't have time to dedicate a year to writing a book or to taking the book through that process. Somebody who's doing a memoir, for instance, it's often completely foreign territory and they just need help navigating the waters and they need help telling the story. Again, in the fiction world, often whenever fiction writers use ghostwriters or collaborators, generally it's because they're just too busy and they just need to churn out more books in a more timely way, generally. So you know, if one of those three don't really apply, then you get to write the book yourself.
Okay.
That's not what you wanted to hear at all, is it?
Okay, Amy, let's talk a little bit about the business end of it.
My understanding
is that the ghostwriting is traditionally done as work for hire. So is the idea you basically negotiate your best deal and then go for it?
Okay, well, it depends where in the process you are. And okay, let's take the work for hire thing first. Let's address that first.
Sure.
Many people do think of ghostwriting essentially as work for hire. And in many circles, that somehow tarnishes the brass ring. The very first book that I ghostwrote as a book, start to finish, I wrote the book, yes, it was work for hire. However, I negotiated a rate that I was happy with. I got paid for writing the book, so I was happy with that. You have to be happy with whatever you negotiate. Yes. At the time, I did not have any books in print. I had a few other, I had other writing credits to my name, but I couldn't point to a book and say, look, this is what I can do for you. And so the person who hired me, I felt, took a tremendous leap of faith. I had done some writing for him anyway, but he really went to bat to the publisher because he wanted me to write his book. So, yes, it was work for hire. I got paid. The book is selling very well. It's a bestseller for the publisher, and I see no royalties for that. Am I bitter? No, not at all, because that book got my foot in the door, and because I can directly trace, probably in many ways, I can directly trace 90% of my income today from sources that came because of my work on that book.
Right, that got you your street creds.
Well, that got me my street creds, but even more than that, there are many benefits to ghostwriting, and yes, there are some drawbacks, that's true, but you don't go into ghostwriting necessarily just for the paycheck, and if you do, you kind of really need to examine your reasons for doing so. If you do go into a project just for the paycheck, it better be a heck of a paycheck. It just better be. Now, do I do work for hire now? No. Okay, so now whenever I co-author or collaborate or work on a project, I'm trying to think of any exceptions, and I can't come up with any right off the bat, but usually I negotiate royalties as part of it.
Right. So that kind of segues into my next question. Suppose that I wanted to get started in the business. How do I hang out my shingle? Is there a professional association I need to join, or...
There may be. If there is, I am unaware of it, but there may be. And you may get all sorts of letters saying, oh, you know, join Ghostwriters R Us, but I'm unaware of it if it exists. So email me and let me know that it happens. No, actually, there is a trick to it, and it amazes me that that very few people have figured this out. All right, and here's the trick. So you ask the million-dollar question. If I want to learn about writing, I go to writers' conferences. I meet other writers. And I talk to agents, and I talk to publishers, and I learn the nuts and bolts, right?
Right.
Does that make sense? Okay,
yep.
That's right. I do not, however, go to writers' conferences to drum up business for myself as a writer, because if you throw a stick at a writers' conference, you hit six writers, so that's no good, okay? All right, so I want to get known as a ghostwriter. That's not even the point. I want to be able to work with people who are experts in their field, who have the political clout, or who have the following to get a book published, okay? Because generally, realistically, the reason many people begin ghosting or ghost their first book is because it's a way to get published, okay? And
yeah.
That's true. Now, the reason that you may ghost or co-author or collaborate on subsequent books is because of the other benefits that come with it. Okay, so let's say that I just want to get published. I want to meet somebody who can use me. That's the key, all right?
Right.
I know that I can do the job. I know that I am capable of producing a book. You must be able to say with absolute certainty that, yes, I know that I can do this. I can do it from start to finish. I can. All right, if I have the content, I am absolutely capable of putting it together. Then you ask yourself, what do I like to do? And who would I like to work with? All right. I mean, really, it's essentially like draw your own dream job, all right?
Yeah.
Because I've always been a horse nut. I was one of those horse crazy girls, okay? So I was taking a riding clinic from a clinician, or from Clinton Anderson. I wrote his book, and we were there. We got talking, and he mentioned that he had a publisher who wanted to publish a book for him. And of course, Here's me going, that doesn't happen. Publishers don't come to you. And so he said, well, you know, he had no idea how to write a book. He wasn't even interested in learning how. He needed to find somebody who could help him. There you go. And I said, when you're ready, give me a call. And he did. So if you're interested in anything, start attending conventions where experts in your area of interest go.
Right.
That makes all in the world, okay? So if you want to write a book on, let's say you want to write a book on, if let's say you're interested, don't even worry about writing a book. Let's say you're just interested in finance, real estate investing, model trains, you know, ancient antique tractors, whatever. Start going to places where experts in those fields show up and speak, you know, or do a presentation or conduct seminars. And while you're, and that means not only that will you be then around experts, but you'll be around a whole bunch of other people who bring a wealth of information on that particular topic to the fore. And when people then ask you what you do and you say, I'm a writer, well, if you threw a stick, you'd probably be the only writer there. So
yes.
You instantly become something of of an oddity. Oh, you're a writer. What do you write? And you say, well, you know, I do a little bit of everything. And I'm especially interested in helping people, especially experts in this particular field, whatever that field might be, model trains, get the word out. And I would love to work with somebody who really knows what they're talking about so I could learn more. It's a really
awesome.
Easy way. Yeah, it's a really easy way to get people to call you.
Sounds like the perfect recipe to me.
I don't guarantee. If you do it right, generally you get to pick and choose your projects. Because here's what happens. All right, we're all familiar with this probably. If you go somewhere and you actually have the guts to say I'm a writer, whether or not you have a book out, okay? If you
right.
just try it. I mean, I'm going to a cocktail party, I'm going to say I'm a writer. unless you live in New York or LA, usually yeah, in New York or LA, you got to come up with something more interesting. But no, unless you live in a big city, usually if somebody says, what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a writer, you get, oh, how interesting, which may or may not be true. But people often then say, oh, you should meet so-and-so. He has the best story. He needs somebody to write his book.
Yeah.
It just kind of naturally flows. And what many writers do is they discount that because they go, well, I don't want to write so-and-so's book. I want to write my own. If you're open to perhaps dedicating a few months of your life to writing a book for somebody who's a bona fide expert in the field or who really has an honest-to-God story to tell, it might lead places that it might really open some doors for you.
Great. I was curious, you mentioned screenwriting. How
mm-hmm.
does that sort of work, and is that the same as script doctoring, or how does that go?
Yes and no. It all depends. Script doctors, I think, are essentially ghostwriters. Their fingerprints show up on a script and their name shows up nowhere.
Yeah.
Collaborating is, to my mind, is a little bit more fun because your name gets to show up on the final project and you work a little more closely with it. You get a little say into plot, structure, story, character, all of that sort of thing. And again, it is more fun. You really build solid relationships, you build the relationships built around the project. A script doctor is really more of a glorified editor, I would argue.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So a script doctor kind of comes in at the end and then makes a script better, whereas a collaborator comes in more, not necessarily always from the very beginning, but comes in the earlier stages and has a real hand in directing the script and changing the script and in influencing the story.
So I might have a storyline and then I just need someone to finish the screenwriting for me.
Yeah. You need to find somebody. If you're talking screenwriting, okay, screenwriting is one of the little gray areas where when I do ghostwriting for a publication, let's say, for publishing, for that it's going to end up in a book, I do not write word one without a contract.
Uh-huh.
Often in the screenwriting world, you get it's much more nebulous, it's much more mushy and gray. And so I do not collaborate with anybody that I don't know well, that I don't trust. And even then, things can go awry, I'm sure, but you really need to be very, very careful because you want to be careful. if you're working with somebody, again, you need to know your reasons for collaborating on a story. You need to know clearly in your mind why you are willing to give somebody else your good ideas, and you need to trust that person. So it can be an awful lot of fun, and it can be a fabulous learning curve. You can learn so much collaborating with somebody on a screenplay, especially somebody who has real industry credits, perhaps in an area that you are unfamiliar with.
Uh-huh.
It also helps if you know your strengths. For instance, my strengths in story, in any fiction, in any work of fiction, my strengths, I know, are plot and story. Absolutely. I'm also not bad in character development. My weaknesses tend to be in dialogue, although I'm getting better. And so I love working with somebody who's really great at dialogue, who needs a little help punching up plot. To me, that's just a match made in heaven. Because
yeah,
then I get to learn.
You can kind of complement each other on
right,
areas that
right. And then if you're both open-minded, you know, it's like I have spent I have spent literally hours doing a line-by-line going through of a script and really literally fought for 30 minutes over the inclusion of a word. No, she wouldn't say that. You know, so it's an interesting process, and there's so much more energy to it, I find, than if I just write a script by myself, because if I write a script just by myself, that I tend to be married to things that perhaps I should be less committed to and more open to throwing out. Whereas in a collaboration, you tend to forget whose idea that word was anyway after a while, and
uh-huh.
you're able to look at it more objectively and make it a stronger project. That's my experience,
wow.
anyway.
That's just fascinating. Now, I understand you have a formula, as it were, for figuring out whether the project fits your methods.
Oh, yes. Well, I have a little formula of how to determine whether a ghosting project is right for you to get involved in. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yes, I do. And this is something that has worked quite well for me, that I apply this to every project that comes my way, and I ask myself some questions. I call it the 6 P's, okay? The first one is, if I'm considering a project, the very first thing I take into consideration is the project as it stands. So somebody comes and says, I want you to write this book. I consider the project, and I ask myself questions like, am I personally passionate about this book? Can I stay passionate about it for the next 9 to 12 months as I work with the expert, as we go through development, as I pull out my hair over the person who decides to take vacation for 3 months without telling me, who, you know, whose internet goes down? Can I stay passionate about telling somebody else's story for about 9 to 12 months? Do I really feel it's worthwhile? Do I really think the world needs a book on this subject? And does this, at the very outset, does it appear to be something that I'm going to be proud to have been a part of? Okay, so first of all, I consider the project. The next thing I consider is the person who is the field expert. And I say, is that person someone whose talents or expertise I admire? Is it somebody I want to spend time with? Because we're going to spend time together one way or another, whether it's online or on the phone, or one way or another, I'm going to have to get to know this person. Do I really feel that this person has a compelling story that I need to tell? And frankly, does the person deserve to have me or anybody else help him or her write his book? Okay, so the project, the person. The next thing I consider is the publisher. And I ask, will the final book be quality? Will it be a quality product? Is the publisher well known? Is the publisher well respected? If it's a small publisher, that's not a problem, but do they have a good distribution system? So is this book something that's actually going to have a readership? Am I going to spend a lot of time of my life producing something that has no distribution? Does the publisher also have access to other field experts who may need a ghost at some point? That's one of the compelling questions I ask. The next P is I consider my own professional development. And I ask things like, will working on this project give me something I think I need, whether that's published credits, a byline, a working relationship with a highly respected field expert, or exposure within a particular niche that I want. The next P I consider is promotion, and I believe that many writers could learn a thing or two about marketing and promotion. And so ghosting on books that I know have a big PR push planned or that have a huge marketing machine behind them, that offers an invaluable learning opportunity for me.
Right.
And you know, so that then I can apply what I've learned working on somebody from the sidelines, working on somebody else's book, watching their machine go into motion. I can apply a lot of that then to my own products or my own projects. And then the final P is profit. Consider your profit. We talked about that a little bit. So all other things being equal, you have to come to the, you have to ask yourself, is it worth your while to dedicate your life to this project until it's done? So at least one of those six P's, project, person, publisher, professional development, promotion, or profit, at least one of those has to be enough to bring me on board and to keep me on board. So if you're considering it, it's got to be enough to get you and keep you. So then if more than one of them appeals to you, that's just that just makes a project, you know, weak, that, even better. So I guess it all boils down to this. If you can't find one thing in a project that pushes your button, if you can't find one thing in a project to get excited about, then don't do it. Because it's a huge time commitment, and you're putting your professional name on the line, and if you're only doing it for the money, I guarantee you there is not enough money in the world to make it worth your while.
Amy, this seems to me like these six P's would also apply to co-authoring and collaborating also. It's not only ghosting.
Right, and I do, yeah. I lump essentially ghosting, collaborating, and co-authoring. Like I say, I consider those under the general umbrella of ghosting. I just use ghosting as the catchword. But you're right. I apply them to every project where I'm going to be sharing credit with somebody else or giving credit to somebody else. Because, you know, I don't need my name slapped on a project. But I do consider them before I enter a working relationship with somebody else. Absolutely.
Well, certainly a ghostwriter who somebody is not going to be able to put their name to their work has to have no ego at all.
Well, I got to tell you, this is I find that that's actually one of the unexpected benefits of ghosting. I think there are quite a few pros and cons of writing for people. And one of the unexpected pros that I discovered was a loss of your writing ego. I heard a quote a long ago, and I can't remember who is credited with saying it. So it goes something like, there's no limit to what you can accomplish if you don't mind who gets the credit. And when you ghostwrite for absolutely, you lose your writing ego. And I got to tell you, it's very freeing. We talked about this a little bit ago. Some writers become so married to their words. I find if I'm working on a creative project especially, and it's just me alone in my little room with my computer, happy as a clam, with nobody else to discuss, you know, that I have to report to, I can look at something and think it's fabulous. And somebody else could look at it and say, yeah, no. But the ego kind of rears its ugly head, and I have a tendency sometimes to be combative. But if I'm writing for somebody else, that writing ego goes right out the door, and it's amazing then how that frees you to look at your writing objectively and make it much, much stronger.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that it's the loss of the writing ego is actually a benefit, because those of us that have egos wouldn't think it's a benefit at all.
You know what, though? Oh, you know what? I don't know. It's good to know what you can do, and a certain confidence and a certain pride in your work I don't think is necessarily ego. But an ego, I do think that it's a very good thing to be able to look at your writing as part of a larger whole and to be able to remain objective when taking editorial suggestions. I think that in the long run for any writer who's looking at a career, you must be able to accept editorial suggestions with grace, and you cannot take them personally, and you cannot get defensive about them. And writing for somebody else is a great education in how to do that.
Wow, you know, those are just so powerful. The things that you had just said, the letting go and allowing, you know, somebody else to write for you, and you as the writer just having to let it go too. That's powerful. That's very powerful. And thank you very much, Amy. It just unfortunately, you know, we're running out of time, and I know that we could just be talking for another hour here and with you. It's I'm just finding this extremely fascinating, and I'm disappointed that you wouldn't write me a mystery and put my name on it.
Oh, we'll talk.
Okay, but I'd like to remind the listeners of your website, which is amihendrickson.com, and that's A-M-I. hendrickson.com, and I know that they can visit you at your website and look at it, see what you do, and I'm sure they can even email you, can't they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm very good with email.
Great, and thanks again. This has just been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. You can hear us every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we'll be back on the air Thursday, June 14th, 2007, when our topic will be From Book to Bestseller, and our special guest who will be joining us is Penny Sansevieri. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson of Austin, Texas, signing off.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.